Welcome to this week's Coffee with Digital Trailblazers, February 21. So excited to have you all here. We're going to do our normal linger a little bit just to make sure everybody can join. Say hello on the comment stream. Hello, David. Hello, Santosh. Thank you for being here. Today we're going to be talking about small and medium-sized business transformation, how the smaller can be faster and safer and smarter. It should have read smarter there in the graphic. That was a mistake. And so smarter, faster, safer, and excel against beating some of the bigger and slower competitors they have in their spaces. And it's something I believe in. It's something I've been doing as a leader for over. Geez, Jay will remind me when I started at Business Week, 2007, helping organizations that needed to become more stronger at technology and data and analytics, and realizing that what we were doing at Business Week, which was at that time about a $300 million business, could not be the same things that we were doing that our sister companies, companies like S&P and that is now independent S&P and McGraw-Hill Education. These are billion-dollar businesses. We weren't able to use the same tool. I think we had better talent, but we had smaller talent. We had different types of partners. We have different technology stacks that we were doing. And that was sort of my first lesson that yes, you can do transformation, you can do technology, you can do innovation with smaller and medium-sized businesses, but you need to have a different game plan. And so today we'll be sharing some of those secrets about how to create a different kind of game plan when you're a digital trailblazer working in one of these organizations. So we have our normal guests today. We have some new guests today. Just give me a second. We're just going to move. I'm working with one screen today, so I'm bouncing between different screens. Move our screen over so that we can see our dashboard. Jay, welcome to the floor. Hello, Derek, John, Joe, Joanne, welcome to the floor. Looking forward to this conversation about how we can be smarter, faster, safer as a small and medium-sized business competing against bigger and slower competitors. So here's what I want to do a little bit different. I've shared five different areas that we can all talk about. You can pick one of those areas or you can create a new one. We all have different experiences working at SMBs and competing with big companies. So I want to be able to get a broad perspective. And so when it's your turn to speak, I'd like you to comment on one of your predecessors, something they said that you either agree with or you want to accent or put some more feedback around, or maybe even disagree with, and then pick another one off the shelf, pick another area to focus on that you have expertise in, and share your comments around that. Jay, I've already shared my comments. My main one is that every small and medium-sized business does need a different game plan, a different strategy, a different org model, different practices. We're going to call it agile. We're going to call it DevOps. We're going to call it data and AI governance. But our practices are going to be slightly different when we're operating in a small and medium-sized business. So, Jay, feel free to comment. And then I'd love to hear one of these other areas, what you want to comment on. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you very much, Isaac. Really appreciate it and happy to be here. One of the areas that I think I'd like to focus in on is the data analytics, AI, and becoming a more data-driven organization. I think that with if you are looking to compare a smaller, faster organization or smaller organization, they can move faster. They can be a little bit more safer because they've got less data to draw upon as compared to a larger organization that's big, has a bigger and a slower model. However, a larger organization can handle very complex tasks with higher accuracy. They have a better, in my opinion, way of understanding the context and the nuance because they've got a larger data model to choose from from within their organization. But on the flip side, the smaller organization, I think, can be have lower costs to run and maintain their data model, their AI model. They're limited in handling the complex, and nuanced tasks. And I think that you have to kind of choose which model you would like, depending on the size of the organization you're in or that you're working with. I think the key model type is the response time requirements that you have to take into consideration, the task complexity that you need to take into consideration with using data and AI, the availability of resources to build out these AI models within the organization, so resource availability, the cost constraints, and then the accuracy needs of the organization. So that would be my top maybe five items that I would suggest when looking at data analytics and AI and becoming a more data-driven organization. It's that differential between the smaller versus the larger organization.
No, Jay, it's a great point. I mean, smaller often can mean smaller data sets and smaller data complexities. But you do make so that means you have more tools that are in your disposal. You have less cost involved in doing the analytics. You still have the work to make it more real time. So that could be a hidden advantage if you're able to use more real time analytics, faster decision making, and be able to compete that way. Looks like John's raising his hand. Go ahead, John.
I agree that smaller companies can be a lot faster. They can be faster in so many different ways. When it comes to hiring, there can be less bureaucracy. When there's customer issues, like a smaller company, like often the CEOs are more involved. They can immediately jump in on the issues, make decisions to make things better for customers. And then when it comes to like launching new products or something or new lines of business, like you can make a decision with so many less people to choose that you're going to go in a direction, and without a complicated business cases or a bunch of things written. I've literally seen customers ask for something on a call, and the CEO makes a call saying, "Yeah, we can solve that for you. We'll put that in place, and we'll work out the numbers." But agree to do something, a new business line, new product for a customer, right out of the gate. And so that's why it's smaller companies can move so much faster.
I love this notion, John, of faster hiring, smarter hiring. I mean, just the amount of time larger organizations take to get all the approvals and get all the people involved to say yes to something, like hiring a good hire. And then using your size to your advantage when you're trying to recruit, that person and giving them a sense of the autonomy and the empowerment they have, when joining your organization, creating learning as an advantage. I think those are all great attributes. Hi, Derek. Derek, you raised next, and then we're going to go to Joanne after.
Yeah, so based on your point, Isaac, I'm going to go back and say, working the smarter. So every small business I work with is always about thinking of how can we work smarter, not harder. Being more flexible in the things that we need to do, looking at the product sets that we have, how can we get our products out there to be better than the competition? And knowing that the larger conglomerates, the corporations have more money, we have to adopt our thinking to be better. So if I adopt a chess-like mindset to look at the strategic alignment of the business mission, how I'm going to plan these transformations throughout the year is going to be key. And some of that is looking at an agile type strategy, looking at how they can work with adopting quicker to market type shifts. Look at how they can optimize their products better for the data that they're working with and what they're trying to provide their customers. But the Agile also allow them to respond faster to changes based on customer feedback and price and elasticity that they're working with. And then the other thing, according to Jay, looking at the new technology we have out there now, artificial intelligence, if they can actually tap into use artificial power tools more efficiently, if they can help streamline their operations, looking at how they can enhance customer interactions, but also they can really figure out how to make their employees more focused. Let the artificial intelligence tools and technologies do the more mundane jobs where the people can do the more strategic things.
Sounds great, Derek. Surgical strike into what customers are looking for. Act with more agility. Empower your employees to try out new things with AI, and learn from them. I love those examples. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning. I would normally have chosen data and analytics, but Jay got there first. That's okay.
Joanne, you can go there. You can double up.
I will double up. But the first thing that I want to say is smaller also means that you have a better shot of creating human-centered design for any of the initiatives that you want to undertake, and that you also can be more human in the loop from the get-go. And that translates into how business processes are considered. It translates into what level of AI you want to use and how it's being directed. Is it more a replacement for remote process automation? Is it more about your customer's experience? But it also creates resiliency within the organization in a much easier format, because now you have customer to employee to customer building the resilience of the small business. And I mean small, medium, up to the kahunas of the industry, because they're following that same playbook. They're just doing it with more resistance. And they're doing it with more hoops to jump through, which makes them slower and less agile. So smaller companies have the opportunity to really start to go back to something that used to be very predominant, which is that you can differentiate your business based upon process and your resource, meaning your staff, your people, and your process. Process used to be a key differentiator, and over the last 20 years has become sort of lost in the woodwork of democratizing everything. But this is a key advantage for small businesses and medium-sized enterprises to play up, because people and process go very closely together.
What Joanne, what I wrote down here from your statements is a focus on resiliency. It's sort of like, what does executing change management in a medium-sized organization where you have where it might be easier to change change direction or to communicate or to get alignment, and what does that look like when there's so much change happening around you? And
It
go
mean, yeah,
ahead.
it means bringing your workforce into the strategic planning cycle in a way that you haven't in the past.
I
And
love.
using that collaborative brain power to help you achieve your goals faster, at lower cost, and quicker time to value. If you remember, my three pillars are time to data, time to decision, time to value. That helps you get to time to value faster.
Yeah, I'm gonna bold that one. I think that's really smart advice for medium-sized organizations is get more people involved, get their opinions, be more inclusive. That's something large companies struggle with. This is an area, again, it's tied to change management, it's tied to being resilient. And I think small organizations that do this effectively are going to find that as AI and trend other technologies become more prevalent, they have potentially a better chance of accelerating adoption around them. Let's bring Heather in. Heather, great to see you again. 2 weeks in a row. I love it. Good to see
Thank
you,
you.
Heather.
Same here. Thank you. One of the things that I definitely agree with in terms of hiring, I used to use the analogy of, and this was before the big tanker hit the bridge in the Potomac. But when you're so large and you're going in a direction, even when you see that there's something in your way or something that is going to be a problem, you can't fix it. And that's why that tanker hit the bridge versus being in a kayak or in a rowboat. One swipe of the oar and you can make a difference. And that's a lot of what I will use as an analogy for someone coming from a big company that's considering a smaller company. And it resonates with people that they really want to make a difference and they want to get out of the bureaucracy. However, one of the and everything everyone's been saying about things get decisions are made faster and less time to hire, and all that is true. One of the biggest issues I've been finding with one of my clients is when you're so small and you've been doing it the way you've been doing it for so long, changing the mindset of the CEO can be damn near impossible. There's a fear of their unknown because, they've been in business in this case for over 40 years.
His answer to everything is just work harder. And the idea of working smarter, working with less paper, working with the cloud, he's afraid of. It's trying to change that mindset, even with people that are coming in that are bringing this excitement and this energy, they're hitting a wall. They're hitting that proverbial, bridge. And my concern is when you think that you're going to an environment where you can really make change and people are resistant to that change, then you're going to lose people. As opposed to that could be a great message to potential talent that, wow, you can come in and you can make all these changes and make your recommendations and your voice is heard and you have a seat at the table, but only if someone's listening.
Heather, I'm glad you brought this up. I'm gonna let Jay go next, but I want Joanne to comment on this afterward. This idea of changing the CEO's beliefs and mindsets. I see that a lot in family-run businesses, whether they're small or medium-sized. The family has been doing things for a long way and a long time. It's worked. They have a healthy profit stream coming out of the business. They're less open to the idea of new ideas, new technologies, and investments. And along comes the younger generation, probably a son or a daughter or a new person they hired who's trying to drive change. And this idea of changing the CEO's belief systems becomes incredibly challenging. Joanne, I hope you'll raise your hand after Jay and speak to how that can be a how you might address that in manufacturing companies, which is I see it quite a bit. Joanne's raising her hand now. Jay, I'm gonna let you go next, but there's one comment here from Dave Morgan I just want to share about SMBs. Dave says, be faster around contracting, which I think is really smart. It's just a huge inefficiency in large businesses, and you look for how small businesses can just do things more efficiently. Contracting is certainly one of those areas. Thank you for that comment, David. Jay, your comments. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I just want to reply to thank you to Heather about employees and specifically in AI, because that's my big focus using data and AI. I think that in organizations, especially larger organizations, employees are longing for more support and training on AI and generative AI. I think where the disconnect comes in, to Heather's point, is that leadership doesn't quite understand AI, and they would read it in a magazine, or their board is telling them, "Hey, you have to start using AI." I think the employees are more open to the training and to utilize AI, and I think that the adoption of AI and data, and especially data and AI, is through training. It's to get that clear picture. It's to get that employees to get more engaged and encouraged to use AI tools, the large language models, for example. And I think that senior leaders, like maybe the C-suite leaders, can help millennials help lead that way. And I think that, and again, I'm just commenting on Heather's comment here about the employee engagement here.
Thank you, Jay. Joanne, before I bring you in, Joe, I think you're here. We haven't heard from you yet, so I want to bring you into the conversation if I can.
Yeah, thank you. I just had a little technical issue this morning, so I couldn't get in early. But what I'm hearing on data analytics, less bureaucracy, with shorter pilot programs and quick approvals, Heather's faster hiring cycles. I think you mentioned this as well, time to hire. I think this all falls into a category of a smaller distance from top to bottom in the organization. It's flatter and therefore more nimble, and a shorter distance between the customer and the company, the employees, so that new ideas get out faster, feedback comes in faster, and you can react faster. So I see this as, compression of the layers, if you will, and the distance to the marketplace are reduced. And that gives the SMB a great advantage over larger companies.
Joe, I'm going to comment on the customer to organization distance. I think that's really smart to bring up. When you're working with large companies, their products are SKUs, their customers are, objects in their ERP and their CRM. There's a, an account manager or a sales rep that might know them. But when you're smaller, the notion of being able to bring more of your employees to go meet more of your customers is something that you really should take advantage of. That's a way of being able to not only get feedback around your product and service, but understand what they are doing before and after your product and service. This is one of the tricks I do in my innovation workshops is really envision their entire workflow, not what your product and service is doing. And the only way you can do that is by spending time directly with customers and seeing how you fit into their entire ecosystem. Joanne, you're up next. I want to talk about that CEO to organization distance that how do we change their mindsets when they're, to use Martin's phrase, stuck in the mud?
Well, I think, for a smaller organization, usually, even a large mid-tier, the C-suite is usually more involved, right? I mean, there's the same, you may have the same hierarchy as in a larger organization, or you may be a little bit more flat, but either way, the day-to-day involvement of the C-suite is much deeper, right? There's not another two or three or four layers of management levels in between. So they interact, especially in manufacturing, with the workforce in a much more collegial sort of way. And that's the human in the loop side. And where it translates really, really well is we have to remember that the guardrails of AI and even data management, the guardrails need to be in place where you still have human approval. It's not to say that you don't want to do automation, but rather where it really counts, where it can make a financial impact or build top line, excuse me, or build value for the organization is much more consequential. So for the smaller organization, you want to not only bring people in at the planning stage, but you also want to go down the road of understanding that where you are going to use more advanced technologies like AI, human in the loop approval processes are going to be required. And what I recommend to most of my clients is use a stage gate approach, have it built for autonomy, but have a process in place that allows you to release that autonomy only after trust in the data has been established. And I think that that's part of what Jay may ascribe to as well, and other folks that are dealing with more advanced technologies. And to your point, Isaac, just to close it off, the resiliency factor for a small or mid-tier company is 10 times more valuable than it is for a large company, because they can go under much easier and much quicker than the large company will. So again, we have to be careful with what we recommend in terms of technologies, but changing the CEO's mind is easier in the small organization because they're more hands-on with the day-to-day. They start to see not problems, but initiative or but programs. They start to see programs and initiatives and the direction of the business, and that's how you change their mind. I can
Interesting.
impact your business financially from a resilience point of view, top line and bottom line. And that resonates.
What do you say, Derek?
Yeah, I like the resilience factor that Joanne brought up, but I've also seen where you've got the CEO or the C-suite where they're not in tune, and you've got everything from baby boomers to Zoomers, and the Zoomers are trying to wag the dog. And that doesn't really work well. So you figure out, if the resilience factor only works if everybody's on board, everybody's engaged, and everybody's pulling in the same direction. So I think part of that is also just looking at the strategic plan of where the company sees themselves, where they want to be. And that's part of creating what kind of loyalty can you create within the organization, looking at career development. As Jay mentioned earlier, artificial intelligence training, improving productivity in the enterprise, those are going to be key things, but those have to resonate within the organization. I think also when you're looking at this is if you don't have the senior leadership on board, that's going to be detrimental to the growth of the small business. And like I said, if the resilience factors, everybody has to be moving in the same direction. They're going to have to be all hands on deck and really understand this to make this work. But at the same time, also, as you're bringing in new skill sets, they also have to be online and understand how to work with these new things and features based on the growth and the thrust and the moving forward of the organization. And like I said, if all that fire on the same cylinders, where the business is going to be stagnant.
Thanks, Derek. Santosh on the common stream is challenging us, and I'm glad he is, because I've seen different types of companies handle strategic planning differently, and how often CEOs are excited by new ideas and sometimes threatened by new ideas, and how sometimes they're stuck in the mud with how things are working. Santosh says strategic planning, I feel, is exclusive to top leadership access, and being part of them has not worked so far. Tried a few times, faced resistance as the strategy worked in any company, any success story. So we have a question there about, if you're on the outside of that strategic planning, how do you get on the inside? If you're on the outside or on the inside and your CEO doesn't want to invest and doesn't want to change, what are some of the tactics you might want to bring in them? I got another comment here from Srinivas. Srinivas has been on the floor before, and he says, bring technology into the customer experience and support. That's his idea that we should consider. And then Jason has a comment here. Developers need to learn how to speak business. What kind of investments are we talking about? What business goal is this? Meaning, what will the results see? So there's another side of this, is how do we help our technologists and their developers really understand business strategy and what to focus on and the why behind their work? I think Heather was next. Just sharing some more comments here from the group. And what do you want to share with us? And what do you want to comment on? Or what do you want to comment on, and what do you want to share?
I definitely think Jay's comment about training, whether it's AI or anything, that's definitely something that's easily done with a smaller company, and yet also easily done in a larger company, because you can have a program and you can just distribute it out very broadly. It may not be as tailored as it could be for the individual in the smaller companies, but I think that's very valuable, not only for the current staff, but the future talent and what you're trying to attract. What I thought was interesting is about when we talked about AI, and if you don't have the buy-in from the CEO or from the IT department, something I've been reading about lately is the shadow AI, where people are bringing in tools that are not approved, and they're just using it anyway. It's like, no one said I couldn't, so therefore I'm using it. But to Joanne's point, you got to have safeguards. You got to know what data is going in there, what can be released, what can't be released, and what can go into the learning mechanisms of the tool to protect the anonymity and the confidentiality of the product. So that's both a training and is both a challenge and a benefit to an organization. And I think whoever's point it was, I think several people said, in trying to change the mindset of the CEO, showing the resilience, showing the impact, the ROI of doing these things, whatever you're doing, is helpful, but you have to crack. And sometimes it's a hard nut to crack.
I hear you, Heather. I'm going to leave one comment, and then we'll go to John, and then take our break. My comment around this is that you have to put yourself in the shoes of your executives for a second and see, what are they not seeing? What is their vantage point in their view, and how do you get them into another zone where they can see a little bit more about what's happening in the world, what's happening with competition, what's happening with technologies, what your customers are looking for? If your CEO is, spending 30% of her or his time on the golf course and only with, the top 5% of customers, that's their view. And your job as best as you can, is to influence, you know, a wider, deeper view of what's happening in the world. And that's how you're going to get them to change, is to get them to see things a little bit differently. One of the things I do like about Martin's phrase, stuck in the mud, is there's a very big difference between stuck in the mud and stuck in the rocks, right? If your CEO is stuck in the rock that they built, the process that worked 10 to 15 to 25 years ago, the profits they're garnering off of it, appeasing their best customers because you know, they've worked with them for so long and not thinking about growth or change, then, you know, then you're in that situation where you have to see if your talent is working somewhere else. It's very hard to change people who are stuck in the rock. But if they're stuck in the mud, you have some tools to work with. John, I'm going to let you comment, and then we'll take our break and bring everybody else back in. Go ahead, John.
Yeah. And one of the things I found is a lot of times the people running companies, like if you're wondering why they're not doing something, it's good to try to understand actually what's going on, like from their viewpoint, because a lot of times they have visibility to thing across their peers and other, you know, maybe top level customers to things that you may not actually have visibility to. And so I've always found that, like, rather than just assuming that the people leading the company are not seeing something or not don't have visibility to something, sometimes they actually have visibility to some things that you don't have, that like, if you understood that, you may have a better understanding of kind of why they're doing things. And then just back to Santosh's comment, I would think, like, when it comes to strategic planning, it's less about the how senior somebody is, and it's more about how trusted they are. And so, like, the more you can get trusted by the people that are doing the planning, the more you can be involved on it. And so, like, you building relationships with people, you know, being really, really successful at smaller things, so they give you more and more responsibility. I know you're a senior person, but it's just like a lot of times it's not how senior somebody are or how many direct reports they are, but it comes often down to how much trust is that person that's involved in the planning have, and how much of the trust do they have to you.
Thank you, John. Bringing up the word trust, that's a really important cultural attribute, particularly of small and medium-sized organizations. If you're bringing out and looking to empower more people, you need to be able to trust them. And those of you who are working in those organizations, work on developing those trusts. You know, I'll throw the softball to Joe this today and talk about relationship building. And maybe that's an answer to Santosh's question about how do you break into the C-suite. Maybe Joe, you'll comment on that after the break. Folks, you have joined this episode of the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers. I'm a little out of sorts with one screen off of my normal setup at home. I'm here in Charlotte, North Carolina today. I'll be in Houston next week. I will be coming up visits to New Orleans, Palm Springs, California, Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas. This is all happening in the next couple months, and I do dinners in every location that I'm visiting. Some of them are very small. Some of them can get quite big. So if you want to know about my dinners that I'm having in these locations, do reach out. Send me a message on LinkedIn. Ask me about the date and which one you want to go to. I'm happy to extend an invitation for the events that I'm happening there. If you want to know the next coffee hours, remember this link. It's starcio.com/coffee/next-event. Next week, we're going to be talking about accelerating transformation, adapting digital strategy in turbulent times. You can read into that any way you want. We're going to do something like what we're doing here, where I throw some softballs out of just indicators of turbulent times and what digital trailblazers should be doing now to adapt their digital strategy. On March 7th, we'll be talking about bias, deep fakes, and mitigating risks. This is going to be our AI and data bias conversation. I'm sure this is going to be a lively one, and one where I hope we'll all learn from. All right. We're all not experts in this area, so it should be interesting. On the 14th, I have not set a date for that one just yet. On the 21st, this was an event that a topic I had to postpone. We'll be getting back to building smarter organizations, transforming to intelligent operations. That's firm to plant late on the 21st. Excited for that one. If you have ideas or thoughts or topics, I've received some from you for upcoming ones. I haven't set the other ones for the 14th, the 28th, and March yet. I have to look through the list. I'll be doing that next week and signing up for our next set of events. So thank you for joining this week. We're talking about how smaller, faster businesses and safer businesses can win against big and slow. We're talking through different ideas here, and I see Derek is raising his hands next. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, one thing I want to just go back and talk about when you talked about trust, and then Joanne brought up the thing about shadow AI. You know, those are all big things to worry about. And the other thing, as I mentioned, is that mindset. So when you're looking at all this and going back to the term resilience, you know, adopting a proactive risk management mindset for the entire organization is going to be key. And understanding to get your employees to click responsibly, but also understanding what they need and can do versus what's going to be detrimental to the organization. The other thing I want to focus on, which especially with the third party risk management, you know, when they're trying, your small business, you're trying to be agile, you're trying to move fast against your competitors. How do you manage your third party risk? So again, from the risk management mindset, from establishing a robust third party risk management program is also going to be key, and having those systems that can detect those type of things or anomalies that should not be part of your ecosystem or unapproved, like AI tools that have not been approved to be used. Those are going to be key. And you'll work with the technologies and the mindset to get the people to understand where they need to be, what they can use, what they can't use, and what's been approved and what's not. I mean, this has been an ongoing task, but you know, as a small business, these are things they need to think about proactively versus reactively.
Derek, before you go, I really want you to take a few seconds to go a little bit deeper. You know, when you know, a small, medium-sized business may struggle to adopt a NIST framework. They may not have all the technologies in place to protect the organization. They may have to accelerate through vendor reviews that we think are so important. What are the two or three things that are on your must list for a small and medium-sized businesses to do in the security area in particular that you're always looking for?
So I'm looking to see if they have a risk management framework in place, and that you mentioned NIST. So the NIST 800-171 is a cybersecurity framework. That's a basic framework that people can get into. And depending on your industry, if you're a small business doing managed service providers, it may be the Center for Internet Security Controls. These kind of frameworks are going to help give them a base understanding of what are the security things I need to be doing, what are the questions I need to be asking for, what are the technologies I need to have in place to help my business be secure. That mindset and having that roadmap that can help them map out exactly what they need to do to where they and do self-checks is going to be key. Because one of the things that you're going to need to have these in place, if a small business, you need to be doing security audits, you need to be vulnerability scans, penetration testing. These frameworks would give you that basis to help you pass those different things. And if you can't pass them when it comes to compliance and other things that you have to work with governance, it's going to be harder to meet those requirements because you don't have the basic security needs in place. So when you're looking at this from a perspective, and if you're doing business with the federal government, it's even going to be more so from CMMC, which is the cyber maturity compliance that you need to work with, and now working with these other entities as a small business competing with larger businesses for federal type services. So it's going to be key to have those frameworks in place, but also make sure people understand how they work and how they can be part of making it work more efficiently.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we accent that here. I mean, part of what you're doing here when you're going through one of these risk frameworks is you're actually prioritizing. You're saying these are the true risks of the business that we need to focus on. So it's not 25 tools. It's not 15 different process changes. It's, you know, let's talk about those and see which ones are lowering our risks and addressing issues. So thank you for that, Derek. Jay's raising his hand. Jay, I'm hoping there's a couple of comments here around developers. And I want you to say whatever you want to comment on, but I'm wondering, how do you advise organizations that are small and medium-sized business? There's 90% of them, according to Ashish, of organizations fall into the category. They don't necessarily have a lot of developers, you know, and, you know, can't think about building proprietary applications and building agents and things like that, like big organizations. So, Jay, how do you answer that question when you have a very small development team? How do you find strategic advantages? So if you can answer that, great, but I also want to hear your other comments.
Yeah, I'm going to start with my other comment first. I was just reacting to Derek's comment around security and compliance. I think that size is an advantage here. Smaller is better because you can use, and implement zero trust architecture more easily across the smaller network than a larger one. You can maintain like better visibility into your data storage and access. And I think to Derek's point, you can also deploy security updates more quickly across the system in a smaller environment, as well as implement data, minimization principles and use encryption by default. But okay, let me put that aside. That was top of mind. But with regard to developers, I think that the incredible thing about the workforce today, it's the hybrid model. I think one of the advantages of the pandemic was to have and utilize remote developer communities, organizations, et cetera. So really, no matter where an organization is physically located, I think that they can always tap into a developer community, no matter where they are in the world. I'm using a development team right now in India. I do a daily stand-up with them at 8 a.m. Eastern, which is 6:30 p.m. for them, India time. So I think the notion of a lack of development resources for an organization is really not a major blocker in today's economy, given our ability to utilize them in a cloud environment and in a mobile environment.
Thanks, Jay. I just put a comment. Think about low code, small, no code, and SaaS. In small and medium-sized business. I'm going to go to Joanne, John, and then I want to hear from Joe again and then Heather. Go ahead, Joanne.
You know, I just want to build off of something that Jay just said with regard to development teams and being offshore or onshore. One of the things that's happening with smaller and medium-sized companies is they are the ones that are beginning to adopt the notion of exploration of open source in a way that they have not done before, tap into developer networks from the open source community and leverage those tools for their experimental stages, right? I mean, there's a lot of tools that you can use that are AI driven or even AI native that are not necessarily going to get you into trouble unless, of course, you're government related stuff. But that you can use and really learn from those tools because the interface to them, like ChatGPT or whatever, starts a conversation where you can learn while you're doing. And then you can tap into the open source communities for several large, frontier or fundamental large language models. There's a lot of them out there. And that not only promotes the training aspect and the, you know, we're all in this together kind of notion, but it also does help you actually figure out what do you need from data analytics, how you're approaching data as a corporate asset or not as a corporate asset, what you need to really drive value from it, whether you're looking, you know, as I've written previously on return on data, how are you going to actually get the outcome that you want to achieve? This community of development and developers is not only open and available to them to make them more agile and more resilient, but also creates new iterations of business models, new ways of doing things that are outside of the technology. And I think those need to be looked at from a perspective of, I don't have to have a huge budget to be able to compete. I don't have to have a huge IT staff to be able to get where I want to go. I can do a lot of things as a citizen developer and still maintain the security and other compliance requirements that I need if I adopt some of the frameworks to Derek's point, and even if I modify them to my own situation.
There's a statement you said, Joanne, that I wrote down. Look for new iterations of your business model. And what it really makes me think of is, why aren't you behaving like a startup? Right? There are many, many bootstrap startups out there. So it's not like you need a ton of money to be able to look at how you're operating today and look at what markets and customers you're serving and challenge yourselves. And I think that's the advantage of small and medium-sized businesses is, when you can look at 3 to 18 month horizons and say, you know what, we can be doing something completely different in 12 to 18 months if we think there's a better market for us to go after, or we have to drastically change our product to meet a new customer need. And I think that's the key advantage of small and medium-sized businesses. John, Joe, and Heather. Sorry.
Sorry, let me make a. I agree with you, Isaac. One of the things that I would stress also is in those new business models, data as a product has, I mean, everybody and his brother's uncle is talking about this these days, but in the context of agentic AI, but data as a product is also data for services as a product. And a lot of the business models that are quickly emerging now are challenging MSP models. They're challenging cloud provider models. They're challenging virtually everything. So look for those niches where you can really excel and expand your scope of influence to drive new revenue.
Thank you, Joanne. I think John was next, and then I was going to go to Joe and then Heather.
Yeah, and smaller companies, I think it's really important for them to really figure out like what's their core focus and where do they want to have people full time and other things to doing stuff, and then try to figure out everything that's not their core focus and try to figure out how can they solve that with people outside of their company or with maybe fractional people or SaaS, and so that I have, just like Derek mentioned, I've seen that come up with security a ton, and there's so much stuff in security that I think really is better to left at experts. And so like if you don't have those people, I think it's really important to get people in to help you with the things that aren't core to your business. There's SaaS products for that, there's third party monitoring services for that. There's small groups of auditors that can come in. And so in smaller, it's okay to be a smaller company and not have these skills and to need help with it. But the important thing is to address that and make sure that you have all the stuff you need covered. But it doesn't have to be with your employees.
Thank you. Let's go to Joe.
I think John stole my thunder. I was going to say that you really do want to use the people you have on staff for the innovation exercises, for the new product creation, for the defining of the value in the data and bringing new products to customers. And all the other stuff, all the mundane stuff, you rent it. Use MSPs, use SaaS platforms. Keep all the keeping the lights on stuff in a rental mode. Just pay for that. Have somebody handle it. It's gonna make your company faster. It's gonna make it easier to pivot. It's going to make it more cost effective, and it's gonna make your people happier to work here because they're not doing the mundane stuff. They're doing the really exciting stuff.
Joe, it's almost like a paradox too, though, because so much companies, when they build up, they're forced to do so much internally until it becomes a burden for them. And then they have to look externally, and it feels like you're outsourcing at that point. And I think if you take a few steps back and you look at partnerships early, if you look at how AI and automation technologies can supplement what you're doing. If you build for that from the beginning, then it becomes an easier story. Before I let you go, Joe, your thoughts, stuck in the mud versus stuck in the rock. I want to go back to Santosh's question because it's a really, really good one. If you're on the outside in a medium-sized organization from strategic planning, what should you do to build a rapport and relationship with the executives to maybe see the door open up a crack?
It's all about building those relationships. You need to find a way to engage them in a conversation in language that they can understand. I think oftentimes the uphill battle here is that we as technologists look at great ideas through the technology lens. And as Joanne often says, we need to be able to represent what's the value that's going to deliver. We're all enamored with AI, and I've taken to using this new term ROAI, right? What is the return on AI? I don't want to know that it's going to be fun, or that it's a shiny new object. I want to know that it's going to give me a 15% boost in my administrative staff. I want to know that it's going to increase the level of my security by monitoring logs for me. And tell me exactly what it's going to do, and then I'll be happier to have more conversations.
Thank you. I think Heather's next. Go ahead, Heather.
Well, a couple of things. So many notes here that I've taken, and I want to thank people for some sound bites that I'm definitely going to talk to my client about, looking for new iterations for your business model, and using your core focus with your teams. And just recently, what Joe was saying about the way I'm interpreting it is meeting your leadership where they are, in terms of getting their buy-in and helping them to understand. And one of the things that Jay was mentioning about using remote technology staff in any area of a company, when you're relinquishing the geographic bands and bonds that are holding you back in an on-site environment, you're opening yourself up to increased talent. Increased, amazing talent that could be out there. And that talent is new creative, new innovation, new mindset. It just brings so much value to an organization. So it's not only that you're pleasing the people because they're able to live in a high work in a hybrid environment, giving them greater work-life balance, but from the organization standpoint, you're giving opportunities for a whole different array and broader array of people to come in and impact the organization. And I think that that is something that is not only in technology, but in all areas.
Heather, before I let you go, I think it was the Journal that put out that said unemployment in IT is at 5.7%. This was a couple of weeks ago. This is before all the federal layoffs. One of our frequent listener spoke to me about this week, about layoffs impacted over the last couple of weeks. We have a lot of IT people who are going to be more out of work this year than probably ever before. I spoke to a few people working at some of the big tech companies. A lot of them are unhappy with work back to work mandates that are coming. There's this notion, I didn't create this, Gartner said this years ago, when there's a down cycle, it's the best time to invest in technical innovation capabilities. I want to focus on talent there with you, Heather. What should organizations be doing different in 2025 and 2026 to attract talent when it's available?
I think being open to it, and recognizing that this may be the time to expand their mindset, expand their opportunities to consider people that they hadn't thought of before, have those informational interviews, meet with people that you normally would say, well, I don't need that. Well, you don't know what you don't need, and you don't know what somebody can provide you until you start meeting them. I know I've had candidates and senior executives that spend every Friday afternoon. That's their time. They just talk to people, understand who is out there and what potentially can bring them greater talent. So I think being open, being resourceful, and not limiting yourself to what you've always done. And I think that that speaks to that notion that Martin and you've referenced several times today, being stuck in the rocks versus stuck in the mud. If you're stuck in the mud, someone can help you out. If you're stuck in the rocks, you could be broken, and it just is too hard. Hard literally because it's a rock and hard to change.
Thank you, Heather. I think that's a good point. I think the other place I would be looking around a lot more and is with partnerships. There's a lot of opportunity out there as specifically strategic types of implementation partners, thought leadership, advisory partners can come in and take what you know today and just, educate, learn. train your organization to be able to compete in this newer era. And I think that's another thing organizations should be looking to do on the small and medium size in this time. Joanne, I'm going to give you the final word today.
Okay. And I just want to quickly relate an anecdote to something that Heather just said. I have two people that I know quite well, both of whom are clients, who have instituted something that I suggested to them a while ago. Instead of an ask me anything, they're a tell me anything on a particular topic, and they're allowing people who may be looking for jobs or may be looking for part-time gigs or even fractional roles to tell them what they would need to know in their position. In other words, walk in my shoes. I am an executive at. Tell me, educate me what your great ideas are, and then let's take it from there. And I think it's a fantastic way, not only for executives to educate themselves outside of their normal bubble and outside of the role and responsibility that HR takes, just to learn what's out there in the market. This goes back to something I said last week about creative thinking, critical thinking and creativity being needed for AI and for transformation. So I hope more people will adopt that mindset. These two individuals do it 1 hour every other week, like from 4 to 5 o'clock. And it's their way of finding out what's really going on out there and educating themselves at the same time.
Brilliant, Joanne. I've got my two topics that I'm going to put on our list for the next 4 weeks. One of them is going to be about data products, and one of them is going to be about critical thinking. I think we've danced around this a couple of times, but they deserve dedicated topics. So look for that over the next 2 to 4, 6 weeks. She says, that is beautiful, Joanne. Jason says that Southwest just laid off a bunch of people, mostly project managers. If you're a project or a program manager, I have a blog post half written. I don't know when it's going to come out, but it's about career pathing for program managers. I already have a career checklist on my website for those of you in the DevOps space. Product managers and data scientists, you can find it under career checklist, under tools on my starcio.com. I'm adding program managers to that. A few people in the Digital Trailblazer community have asked me for that. We're doing some enhancements to the Digital Trailblazer community over the next few weeks, so look for that. I have another course from my courses that are being added to it that you'll get for free by becoming a member of the Digital Trailblazer community. If you have not checked that out yet or have a question about it, let me know. The website for it is drive.starcio.com/community, and you can get a view of what's behind that community. I think everybody who is here on this list already has an advisory connect program on it. It's a unique program that I hope you will go and check out. Again, that's drive.starcio.com/community. Next week, we're going to be talking about adapting digital strategy in turbulent times. On the 7th, we will cover bias, deep fakes, and mitigating risks. On the 14th, I'm thinking of doing critical thinking. We'll do it then. Joanne, I'll just make sure we have the right audience for that or the right speakers for that. So I think we'll do that on the 14th. And then on the 21st, we'll be talking about transforming to intelligent operations. Thanks for all the comments today. Ashish, Santosh, Srinivas, David, Jason, good number of you leaving some comments here. And be back and visit us next week at the Coffee with Digital Trailblazers, starcio.com/coffee/next-event. That will redirect later today or tomorrow to the next event. Everybody, have a great weekend. I look forward to seeing you at our next event.